Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're joined by Vicky Turner from Land Rover Life. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Nice to see you.
You too, long time.
Yeah, it's been a little while. We thought we'd get you on and have a little catch up, see what you've been up to, and we need to talk about your recent adventure in your Series 2A, because lots of questions we get are revolved around how far you can drive a Series Land Rover, and I think you've probably dispelled any myths about that. So.
Yeah. 1500 miles round trip, all in the UK though.
Yeah, but even so, like, what an adventure.
Yeah, I'm deaf now, but it was good.
And slightly paralysed.
No, I don't mind it. I'm the only person I know who has to pull the seat forwards in a Series 2A to reach the pedals.
Okay. That probably does help then. Series 2A then, tell us a little bit about how you got into it.
So I learnt to drive in a Series 1 Land Rover that was totally unroadworthy, and it was my mate's. In fact, I went to the Series 1 Club Rally with it, because it's now back on the road, having spent about 25 years in a barn. That's showing me age, isn't it? But yeah, I did learn to drive at a farm hack, Series 1. Used to drive it to the pub, leave it on the other side of the hedge so that we weren't actually going on the road when it had a few too many beers. And then it goes to the pub at age 16, 17, as you used to do back in the 1980s. And used to drive it back across the farm. And that was how I learnt to drive. So I've always had a sort of Series 1 thing. Dad was army. He grew up around Land Rover, spent half his life with an arm out of a window in Aden and Kenya and all over the place. So always had that sort of interest in Land Rovers. And then about 2008-09, I started my own business, running a gardening business when my kids were little.
Oh, right.
And that was how I justified having a county station wagon, 110, because I used to get my steel loppers in the back. Only that was robbed off my drive in about 2011, and then I built a house. So I traded the Land Rover when I got this money back from the insurance, traded that in for a Mitsubishi L200, which I promptly blew the engine up off because I drove it in the same style that I drove the county station wagon.
Best thing for it.
Yeah, and then so there was a period of time when I didn't have a Land Rover, and then I bought the Carrow wagon. Or Searle Safari Sleeper.
Yes, it's not just any Series 2A, is it yours? It's a little bit special in that it's probably one of the very few 88 inches that you can actually sleep in.
Yes. I don't know how many 88 inch conversions there were, but there really aren't very many left on the road.
No.
Used in the way that I use it.
No, certainly. In fact, if you've ever seen Vicky's Land Rover at any of the events, it's quite a clever design, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
It is
compact and bijou and designed by boat builders, so every bit of space has its thing, and it plays into my sort of slightly OCD because everything has a place and I know where everything is and I can find it even in the dark.
It is incredibly neat in the back, isn't it? It's like a little kitchen area, but then the sleeping range, because it's not like a, is it a pop top?
No.
I can never remember.
No,
it's not a pop top, is it?
It has a safari roof. Ooh, I'm not allowed to say safari roof.
I think we're fine. That's called a tropical roof.
Is it a tropical roof?
Are they not safari sleeper?
Well, there's a whole thing about it, because
Said it's a safari roof.
The long wheelbase 109 was called a safari in certain literature, certain promotional brochures and stuff, and that's where the name comes from, I believe. But because they have the double skinned roof, people automatically call it a safari roof. But actually, I think you'll find it's
and
it does
trigger people.
You do
massively.
That quite well. Hello.
yeah, it's actually called a tropical roof. I think I do believe.
Okay, I've learnt something today.
There you go. So.
So even though it's got a safari roof, it hasn't got a pop top on it.
Right.
But it has got a rock and roll bed in the back.
The sleeping arrangement is probably the most unique thing about it, isn't
it? So it's got a cutaway bulkhead, slightly reinforced. Not sure I'd want to roll it.
Steve's got a cutaway bulkhead at the moment.
Do not talk to me about cutaway bulkheads.
Sorry, so we'll get onto that in a bit.
Another trigger, right?
Yeah.
So, it's got a cutaway, and the base of the front passenger seat comes out. The back flips forwards, and on the rear of the back of the seat, there's a sort of a cantilevered bit of timber, solid wood timber, that you then slot the base of the seat into. The lid of the cubby box, which is not a central seat, slides forward. So you've got to be in reverse gear so that you can sort of slide this pad up forwards on the top of the cubby box. And then there's another cushion that then breaches the bulkhead. And the rear bench seat sort of rocks and rolls down again, and that creates basically a three-quarter full-size, full-length bed.
Full-length as in, like, could I fit in it?
No, probably not. You're quite tall.
Yeah.
I mean, you could with your knees bent.
Yeah. I think, Yeah, I've tried to sleep in the back of a Series before, but in the...
Yeah, in the actual load space.
Yeah. You would probably be quite comfy because nobody sort of sleeps...
completely straight.
No, no, you don't, do you? Yeah, you sleep so you sort of bend your legs around or whatever.
You'd probably get soggy socks, though, if they were pressed up against the windscreen.
Honestly, the worst is when I was sleeping in the Glens in Scotland over one New Year and I made the mistake of sort of not wearing pyjamas to bed and having that moment of sort of a cold... bare arse against a bit of galvanised in the back. It certainly wakes you up with a surprise.
Could have been worse. Could be like frozen to it. You know,
beating it away like a dog lifting a lag post.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been an interesting, call. Fighter, yeah. Wouldn't it? Mountain rescue. I've got my arse stuck to galvanised chassis.
So yeah, it's
that vision.
It's a great thing though, and you keep it in lovely condition. If
I don't
mind me saying.
Thank you.
It's,
well, I don't personally.
Well, no, we were just chatting, weren't we? Because obviously Steve's 90 is mid-build at the moment. And he said to you, how do you keep on top of all your jobs? And you were very honest and you said, I don't.
But no. I can do things
who
in...
Who looks after your Land Rover then? Somebody local?
Various people.
Okay.
Willing people.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on what it needs, whether it's service. Rob Maud's done it before now. It's
yes.
Blackpool.
Yeah.
Blackpool replaced all of the electrics about 4 years ago. But yeah, it's whoever's got the capacity, whoever I've been talking to at the time when we identify a need for a bit of work doing. Had some welding done by mate Ben Walker.
I was going to say, I had foot
welds. He put some new
foot welds
in it, yeah. Neil Watterson has replaced, he needed a vehicle to use the new Brit Park rear step, series rear step.
Oh, yeah.
So he
yeah.
came and bolted that on.
Oh, happy days.
I know, I was quite lucky. But no, I have neither the time capacity, the skills, the tools. In fact, I was having somebody take the piss out of me because my socket set is like this big, 4 inches long.
Christmas cracker
yeah,
spec.
Exactly. But yeah, I don't. I enjoy driving it. I enjoy messing about in them. But the concept of spending my weekends tinkering under the bonnet is just not for me.
I'll never forget when we used to do the LRO show at Peterborough and we had your series in for
yes,
a couple of jobs, didn't we, in
the
Brit Park Workshop Theatre. We put new rear springs on it, new rear leaf springs. We put 109 springs on it because being a camper, you know.
Yeah, needed a bit more heavy duty.
A little bit more carrying capacity. And afterwards, we were clearing up and I said, oh, do you want your old springs? And he looked at me like I'd grown an extra head. Like, what on earth would I want those old springs for? Well, if they were mine, they'd be living down the side of my house. That's what I'd want them
along
for.
Along with your huge collection of wheels, tyres and engines.
Associated scrap. But no.
No, not for me. Like, there are things that I'm kept prepared to do. So if anything needs doing on the internals, you know, I'm quite happy to replenish woodwork, do a bit of varnishing, make it a girl's vehicle with curtains and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, the engine side of things, just not for me.
No, that's fair enough.
So do you daily drive?
I don't daily drive it. I have a Polestar, sublime to the ridiculous.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So
that's a company car, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you get away with it. That's
but
how
I do about 25,000 miles in the company car, so there's no way that I would be able to get away with doing that on a series Land Rover. Yeah, I'll be there in 3 days.
I presume yours is 2.25 petrol, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Standard engine. Got reconditioned by Turner Engineering about 10,000 miles ago, 15,000 miles ago. So it is until it spat its carburettor last weekend.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, was that before you got to the...
No, after I got to the LRO show...
Right.
On my way home, it just sort of...
Oh, no, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
Oh, did it give up completely?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to limp it home and it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, that's not ideal. Is that sorted now or is that a job?
Well, I phoned Ben Walker, who happens to carry one as a this-will-get-you-home spare carb. So
right.
He came with tools and his girlfriend and we sort of did swap the carb on the side of the road about 10 miles away from home. So mine has gone for a rebuild.
Got you.
So we've got a rebuild... kit for my original Zenith carb and it is being rebuilt by somebody who knows what they're doing.
Excellent.
And Ben, being Ben and a little bit OCD and an engineer, is trying to work out why my carb spat itself in the first place.
Fair enough. Well, I'm sure they'll find that out when they strip it down.
It will mean nothing to me, but he'll be happy.
Yeah, I think it's like things like that when you geek out and stuff, like you're absolutely obsessed about why something's not working.
It goes hand in hand. For a lot of people on the Land Rover side, that goes hand in hand. And this is why the trigger of the is it a safari roof or is it a tropical roof?
Yeah.
For me, I don't really mind. I just love the shape of them. I like driving them.
They do look great.
Doing
they do look fantastic. Yeah.
It does look fantastic. Yeah, Marine Blue Series 288.
It's Sheep Tracker Blue.
Yeah, exactly.
But that is the beauty of my Land Rover.
You can have blue or green.
But the beauty of my Land Rover is it is a stealth camper because it looks like, and I haven't overly restored it, it just looks like a farm truck.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can sort of pile into a gateway.
It's got that
late at night and park and camp, and nobody really knows that you're doing anything. You know, you could be treating foot rot for all they know.
If you're
having a nice camp.
Yeah. That's one thing you can get from sleeping in without pyjamas on, you know.
Exactly.
Get your foot.
Trench foot.
Soggy socks all round.
Oh, honestly, when I went to the French Land Rover 70th birthday in central France, that was another of my long trips. That was like 2,000 miles round trip. But that was literally in the middle of France. It took us nearly 24 hours of continual driving and ferries to get there. But it rained for about 6 days. And yeah, I think trench foot was a serious risk.
Oh, no.
But I was sending copy back from the back of the Land Rover, and all I could hear was the sort of thundering of the rain on the tropical roof, which acts as an amplifier, by the way, because it's got this double skin.
Okay.
And I once made the mistake of sleeping next to the entertainment tent at Overland Show.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that was quite a noisy band or whatever, and I was trying to get some sleep because I thought, oh, it's knackered. And yeah, it really does amplify any amount of sound. So the tropical roof, for all that it's great for ventilation and stuff, it's
not very
ideal for show camping.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So talk to us about your latest adventure up to Scotland.
So my latest adventure, I have to blame Diana Tigwell, because Diana Tigwell bought the Abbasook Express off John Carroll, which is one of the other series Searle 880 campers.
That's limestone, isn't it?
It is limestone, yes. And she's been a long-time member of the Scottish Land Rover Owners Club, like 20-odd years or something, and she and I, after a few gin and tonics at the Adventure Overland Show in Stratford last year, decided that wouldn't it be a good idea if we went on a girls' tour? And she was like, well, why don't you come up to Scotland? Because they're doing an island tour and one of my favourite places in the country, and again, this goes back to my dad, west coast of Scotland. They were going to go up to Harrison Lewis.
Right.
And she said, well, why don't we, rather than belt it up there and belt it back, why don't we make a few days of it and have a girls' tour? So that's exactly what we did. We met at Penrith Station at a services. She drove up from Cornwall. I drove across from Lincolnshire. Sat and had a dinner in the farm shop at Penrith, because Penrith's got great services and a bit of an air sort of situation, so you can actually sleep in the car park at Penrith. And then we drove all the way up via a couple of other campsites near Oban, got the ferry out from Oban to Barra, and then drove all the way up through the Uists and up onto Harrison Lewis. And it was great. And the weather was kind, and we went swimming. Wild swimming.
What's not to like? You say you couldn't daily drive it. What is doing a journey of that mileage like in a short wheelbase series Land Rover?
Noisy.
Yeah.
Primarily it's noisy. But everybody looks at me like I'm mental, but I drive it quite hard, I think.
Okay.
65 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Once you've got up to speed. Yeah, I mean, the first sort of half an hour, 40 minutes until I get onto the main roads, I will be gentle because you can feel a difference in its performance. Until it's warm and until all the fluids are running around, you can feel it being like, oh, I'm an old man. You've just got me out of bed. Yeah. But once it's up to speed, once it's up to temperature, it honestly, you can drive it at 55 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, and it sort of hurts your ears more. There's a particular timbre of the rattles. Whereas if you put your foot a little bit closer to the floor, 60, 65 miles an hour, there's a sweet spot and the rattles aren't quite so... Either that or is the tyre noise drowns out the rattles. But you get to the point where it's not quite as deafening. And it seems to run happily at that speed.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to crash it or roll it at that speed.
Well, you don't think about things like that.
No, well... What's the expression about real men die without airbags?
Yeah, we die like real men.
Yeah.
What has yours got overdrive?
No.
Oh, wow, okay. So the 60, 65.
That's cracking on for a 2.25 petrol.
But it's very well, it is well tuned. Loads of people that listen to my car get slightly excited about it because it does sound like
it is like a properly sorted out and fresh 2.25 petrol is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
It really is.
You see, this is where you get all excited, and I'm like, yeah, it's pretty.
It does 65. Yeah, they are brilliant. And actually, yeah, I think a lot of the issue, like the 110 isn't awful, but it is diesel, and you know it's diesel. People who do TDI conversions on series, I totally get why. Better performance, better fuel economy. But they are loud.
They're like, really loud.
Compared to a petrol, they are really harsh on the ears.
I think it also matters because, obviously, within mine, because of the bed, because it's got the sort of the curtain, there's quite a lot of soft furnishings in a camper, which probably act as a bit of a sound deadening.
Definitely.
It's also got the sort of lined panels down the side because it's got sort of van sides to it.
Right.
And I don't think it's probably as noisy as a standard.
No, it probably wouldn't be. Yeah, in fact, do you notice, I know for a fact in my truck cab I do, if you have a passenger, does it seem quieter?
Yeah, but that's because they're shouting at you.
To slow down or
to talk
for their
to
lives.
Generally. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, because I always think, because there's nothing in mine. I did have a bit of foam stuck
Yours
to the roof
a
for a bit.
Isn't it?
No, it's a truck cab, but it has a three-quarter canvas. Okay. But as soon as you put someone in the passenger seat, the sound gets absorbed so much more. It's really weird.
It's ballast.
Well, there's less room for an echo to develop, isn't it?
There must be.
Yeah, some sound engineer will tell you why that is.
But the
flubber deafens engine noise.
Well, I guess so, yeah. And the more like bags and stuff you cram behind the front seats and that, it does all make a difference. So just go fully laden everywhere and take a passenger.
I've got permanent tinnitus, though, that I do blame on Land Rover driving.
Probably, rightfully
that
so.
That clubbing in the 1990s.
Oh, good stuff. So the actual trip there.
Trip was great, yeah. Not a single issue. In fact, the only problem that I had was that the regulator on the gas bottle, because it's got a holder for a gas bottle on the back door, which I tend not to travel with because it sort of looks like a mobile bomb, although it does stop tailgating, which is quite handy. But yeah, I'll put the gas bottle on the inside, but the regulator on the gas bottle broke, which annoyed me inordinately because I couldn't make a cup of coffee in bed without getting out of bed.
Like the old, do you remember Tees Maids? That was your era, wasn't it?
Oh, come on now, that's at heart. Yes, it was.
It's an alarm. The alarm clock that makes you a cup of tea.
Yeah, I remember my grandparents having that.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you didn't have the luxury of, you had to actually move to make it. Yeah, I can see how that would be annoying.
But it's one of my little privileges in life is being able to rock the gas burner on whilst I was still sat in bed and make myself a brew.
Yeah, I can see the appeal.
Yeah. So, although, again, people get very stressed and sort of say to me, well, what about carbon monoxide poisoning?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah. But then you think about the sort of the lack of ceiling in a series.
Oh, it's not like an enclosed area,
is
it?
It's quite well ventilated.
Yeah. And what with a tropical roof?
Yeah, exactly.
Even more ventilation. Yeah, exactly. You're using the right terminology.
I've never woken up with a headache that I haven't inflicted on myself anyway.
Fair enough.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
But what else did you get up to in Scotland?
So what did we do? We obviously went to Oban. We did a bit of the tourist thing. So going up through the Uist, you've got various monolithic, megalithic sites. You can tell I'm particularly educated in that period of history. But yeah, went and saw a load of roundhouses, which are just sort of circular depressions in the ground. Did a bit of off-roading because as you do, you're sort of following a sign and failed to realise that it was actually a footpath. But Land Rover, took it all in its stride. So a bit of dune bashing up there. And the beauty of up there is there's so few people.
Oh, right, OK.
You literally, there's nobody around. So you have this sort of miles of golden beaches with nobody around for sights. We've got great pictures of Land Rover against glorious cobalt seas and white sands.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just fab.
It's a shame it's so far away. That's the thing. It's a big
commitment.
That's
all in your head. It is a big commitment, it's like being in the Caribbean. If you catch the weather right, it is genuinely like being in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I have to say, the photos, obviously you did a piece in the in a recent issue, do look stunning. It looks lovely. I must get there at some point.
You should.
Have you been?
Never, no.
Which furthest north you've ever been?
I've been to a place in Scotland called Auchengillen, which is quite It's north of Edinburgh and Glasgow, but I don't know. Oh no, that's a lie. I'm absolutely lying through my teeth. I did Land's End to John O'Groats, so I've been right to the top.
Oh, you've been further north than me.
I didn't stop there for long, but I have been up there.
Okay.
And it's not the most prettiest of places, is it, John?
No, it isn't. But I tell you what is pretty is the Cairngorms. Mm. Oh, wow.
Oh, amazing. Oh, yeah, different league. It's like the Lake District on steroids.
It is amazing. I would definitely go. Scotland's a lovely place. I'd love to spend more time there. It's proper good.
Well, I'm going back in about 3 weeks' time.
Oh, send me a picture. Master. Oh, of course. Yes, it's important we talk about this, otherwise Neil will be very annoyed.
Is this Mudmaster Neil Watterson organises?
No, it's the British Army Motorsports Association.
Does he organise it? Is he?
He's one of the sort of
he's done Clark
marshals
of course.
And Clark of Course, okay. And he sets out plots all the... And the thing with Scotland is that there is no sort of green lanes.
Yes.
Every bit of off-road access that you have has to be granted specifically by the landowner.
Okay.
So there's an awful lot of logistics that the military and people like Neil go into organising these events. But I did it last year as a complete novice with Alan Crow in a Tomcat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But again, it's one of the Tomcat died, so we ended up doing it in series truck in the end. But it's the team that competes, not the vehicle, if that makes sense. So the fact that you should have broken one doesn't mean that you can't complete the event.
Got you.
But yes, so it's the third weekend in October, 25th, 26th of October. Although if you want to do it, you've got to get your entry in first because entries close on the 1st of October.
You've still got a few days if you're listening to this when it goes live.
Have you?
Yes, you have. Yeah.
Okay.
So don't mess about. It's bama.co.uk.
Bama.co.uk. Yes, BAMA. Yeah. You've got to have a motorsport licence, but that's free to get. And you've got to be a member of one of the Land Rover clubs that they sort of recognise. But other than that, yeah, it's just sort of 100 quid. You get 2 days worth of off-road driving, various sort of orienteering challenges, as well as a sort of 100 miles worth of road navigation. And last year when I did it, we had glorious sunshine. It was Scotland at its finest in the middle of the autumn, so you had all the colours.
Yeah.
And it was just glorious.
They are
mornings and stuff, but it was lovely.
The most, in my opinion, underrated events, really, for off-road driving and navigation, because a lot of people just don't know about them, which is when we try and sort of spread the word really in the mags and
yes.
Now.
And it's fun, you know, and it's brilliant for the British Army because there's an awful lot of drivers on that who are literally sort of 17, 18 year old. So you sort of think, oh, British Army, you're going to be terrified and intimidated. But actually, you're definitely not going to be the worst team there because people drive and take, you know, go round the course in reverse and sort of get themselves very lost. But the camaraderie there between the military teams and the civilian teams, it's just, yeah, I was quietly amazed, very tired by the end of it, tired and emotional.
I bet.
But it's quite an achievement when you feel like you've done it. You don't get a lot of sleep, but it is a challenge, but it's that sort of challenge that you get to the end. It's like doing your Gold Duke of Edinburgh.
Mm.
It's really hard while you're doing it, and then you get to the end of it, and that sort of sense of pride is almost, it's quite emotional. I don't want to get all emotional on you, but it is emotional.
No, I
can imagine, yeah.
I've not done Mudmaster. I've done a few of the others. I've done Autumn Leaves, the one at Bovingdon, and I want to say one of the others. I can't quite remember the name, but they are really, really good events. And you're essentially, for value for money wise, mm-hmm. like Vicky said, you're getting 2 days of off-road driving places you would never be allowed to drive otherwise.
Yeah,
it is really,
and
really
get fed.
Good. You do. The food is good.
The food is really good. So you get sort of proper military fare. There's the traditional 9x9 green tent at the end of it in the evening, and everybody's there with their head torches and their sort of bowls and more please sir. But of course they don't undercater the army, do they? So you're sort of presented with this huge vat of food, which is very welcome at the end
count
of the day.
Me in.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I can't.
I mean, I was half convinced, now I'm fully convinced. Yeah.
I cannot recommend it enough. But if you want to find out about any of these events, the website to go to is www.armymotorsports.co.uk disciplines and 4x4 navigation. And there are, as Martin says, various events throughout the year, and depending on where you are in the country and how willing or otherwise you are to take time off work and or drive for miles.
Yeah.
You know, it is definitely worth doing.
There's also a Facebook page, isn't there?
Yes.
British Army Motorsport Association Facebook page. So check that out, because all the information will be on there as well. But no, I really like the events I've done, and I will make Mudmaster hopefully next year. I might hold you to that. I would honestly, every time Neil comes back on the pictures and stuff, I'm like, oh my God, that looks fun. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. Would you like to chime in? We've had a bit of a backlash off a podcast that we put out. Ooh. It'll be 2 weeks ago now.
Not backlash, surely not.
It's mild backlash. It's probably justified backlash. 110 Double Cab related.
This has caused quite a stir, you know.
This has been the most controversial topic since we talked about meal deals.
don't bring the meal deal thing back in.
Russ Bland has got in touch. Okay. He says, "Hi all, I listened with interest to you and Steve talking about one of your favourite looking defenders being a 110 double cab. I do however wish to defend, excuse the pun, the defender double cab from a practicality point of view after you said it was useless. we own one, a 2008 2.4 TDCI in county trim with only 45,000 miles on the clock. It's a fairly recent purchase and we're absolutely delighted with it. At first, I did think I may regret not going for a station wagon, but on the contrary, we definitely made the right choice. Ours has a canopy over the rear tub, so at least it's not open to the elements. However, I do acknowledge I wouldn't want to leave anything of value in it. Where it does score so highly, and this is something I hadn't thought of, to be fair.
Labradors in the back.
Well, that, and what we were talking about a minute ago, actually. He says, the cab is so quiet compared to a station wagon.
I can imagine that.
Because it's smaller, and because you've got that bulkhead.
Yeah.
And you haven't got the noise of the rear axle.
Exactly.
Blaring through.
He says, yeah, there's no annoying rattles from whatever's being transported because you're separated from it. Mm. All the dirty stuff is kept completely separate. You can hose it out. The heater works better because it's a smaller space.
Fair.
He says he agrees with us in that it looks absolutely fantastic. It's immaculate and in metallic Galway green, which is a gorgeous colour.
Yeah, that is lovely.
Boost alloys, cloth seats, fully carpeted. They love it. Yeah, exactly. And I thought, do you know what? Russ makes a good point. He goes on to say, we also own an early 1985 one, which we've had for years. And I can't get as much in the back of that as I can in the double cab, apparently. So it's a winner in our book. We've owned over 20 Land Rovers over the years. And I think this is my favourite. Each to their own. Love the podcast.
Fair point.
Yeah, I can. You've definitely opened my eyes to things I hadn't considered, Russ. So.
Yeah, no.
Steve looks like he remains unconvinced.
I love 110 double cabs, but I have no need for one.
I can see the point. If it is a utility vehicle and you are maybe a farmer and you want to keep your lambs and your ewes.
Yeah, no, it's a working vehicle to kind of like, build a Spectre edition or something like that, or a replica or something like that. Perfect, but it's a daily for me. I couldn't live with it. I find it living with a 90 quite restrictive.
Yes,
because there's no room in the back of one of them either.
But often in the county station wagon, you've got loads of seats and stuff in the rear anyway, so they take up a lot of your actual.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
that's where I think the utility is the best, in my opinion, for a bit of both. But like Russ said, you do still get quite a lot of noise because it's a tinny metal box on the back, isn't it?
Again, it's the amplification thing that I was on about.
Yes, indeed, from your tropical roof. But, fair play to you, Russ. I think that was a fantastic point and very well made. So, Neil's been in touch. You know Neil.
Which one?
You know Neil. Neil Watson.
Watty?
Yeah.
Watty Watto.
Off of the Barmer events. It's all good, though. He says...
What are you talking to her for?
He says, hi, Martin and Steve, because he didn't know you'd be here.
Okay.
I've just rolled out from under my Series 2A after fitting a new universal joint to the front prop shaft, and while under there, I noticed that some of my wiring was perilously close to the exhaust. We've all been there.
Yeah.
You might not have done, Vicky.
He's an interesting man, isn't he?
It had obviously been like that for some time and not been an issue, but now I know about it. If I hadn't resolved it, it would have been a minor thermal event next time I drove it. Such is Land Rover lore. What's your most memorable part of Land Rover lore, as in... What's your most sort of catastrophic story regarding Land Rovers, I guess? Yeah, I think Epic Fail covers it.
Is that a question to me?
It's to everyone. Let's all get stuck in.
You go first, because you've got some ideas.
Well, I've got a really lovely story, actually. In terms of Epic Fail, when you have no clue what you're going to do in terms of rescuing it. I drove my Land Rover... Where did I go? I went to Holland and Belgium, and I'd only owned it for a year or so. And it's blew a radiator top hose.
Okay.
On a bank holiday weekend in France on the main road. Clouds of steam everywhere, pulled it into the hard shoulder and sat there going,
this is less than ideal.
And given that I don't have my socket set is all of, you know, to be fair, it's only a Jubilee clip. I probably could have actually managed that. But I didn't have any spare hoses with me. You know, lessons learned and all that. But quick message onto Facebook. And the Land Rover community, within 2 hours, I'd got two young Belgian oi oi disco lads turned up with a bit of farm hose. No. I was back on my way within a couple of hours. And I was just, the Facebook community is absolutely fantastic.
That is great. Yeah, that's really nice. You do often see people either stuck quite a lot of the time where they shouldn't be, or broken down asking for help. But it doesn't take long for a response normally, which is, it is good. I think most people, because Land Rover folk in general, if they're not helping with a breakdown, they've had a breakdown at some point.
Honestly, I think people love it. They actually really enjoy the fact of feeling like they can help. And if you see somebody, it's sort of, you know, leave no man behind. And all that. if you can roll your sleeves up and get somebody else back on the road, I think that it is quite a nice feeling. So there you go, epic fail.
That was good.
Epic fail was actually the lack of parts carried by myself as opposed to anything else.
What were we saying, Steve?
I had an epic fail in my first ever Land Rover experience, actually, when I was 19. I had a Series 2A lightweight, and the spare wheel used to live on the bonnet.
Right.
And one day I decided I'm going to change it. So I'm going to do away with the spare wheel on the bonnet and put it in the back. Because it was, at the time, it was a truck cab. Put it in the back, no bother, driving down the road. And what I didn't realise was the spare wheel was the only thing keeping the bonnet down.
Oh.
So I'm driving along at about 40 odd miles an hour. And next thing, the bonnet literally whips up and the spike that held the spare wheel hit the middle of the screen.
Oh. So the screen split.
Blasted glass in my face. I panicked. Well, I kind of panicked as in, like, I was on a straight road at this point. Kind of panicked. Steered to the left, which then put me in a ditch, through the other side of the ditch into the field. Then I obviously must have steered back. And before I knew it, I bounced back onto the road. And I came to a hot... As I came to a stop, the bonnet went back down again. So then people coming the other way didn't know what on earth happened. And I'm literally pulling bits of glass out of me.
Ouch.
That sounds deeply unpleasant.
Yeah. So, my really epic fail scary. Was probably realising that check that your bonnet latch works.
Yeah.
And it's not reliant on the spare wheel keeping it down.
Gravity. Yeah. Wow. Crikey.
That happened in slow motion as well.
It would do.
And it hit the centre bit of the screen. And that was quite scary.
I just thought that you panicked. I think you flinched.
Yeah, I sort of flinched. Flinched. Yeah. And I literally went. Luckily, it was quite a shallow ditch. Not one of these ones around here where you'd be lost forever. Yeah. This was kind of a... and I sort of bounced through and then bounced back onto the road again. But luckily some people came the other way and was like, what on earth has just happened? I said, well, if I'm pulling glass out of my... It was in the summertime, so I had a T-shirt on. I've got glass all in me.
Nasty.
Yeah. Must have been really old-fashioned glass because it was...
Yeah, not tough.
Probably dangerous glass, yeah.
Yeah, crikey.
So, yeah, that was my epic fail.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well,
you must have loads.
I've got a few. Thanks, mate.
I've seen your cars.
I'm trying to really think of whether. So, are we going breakdown fails or like accident fails?
Oh,
because I've got a couple of each. I'll be honest.
I want to hear about your accidents then.
So, both accidents I've had in Land Rovers have involved mopeds. I don't know why.
Right. Okay.
The first one.
Think bike.
Well, I did.
He was thinking about his dinner.
I was the first one. I actually was. I was.
Tell him that. Means.
I was on training with Land Rover because I was an apprentice at Land Rover, and when I passed my test, I used to drive down to Warwickshire where the training centre was. And because I was so young, the company I worked for wouldn't lend me a hire car, so I had to use my own Defender, which I had at the time. And me and a couple of the lads I was on. Training with, thought we'll nip into town and grab a pizza for dinner. So into Warwick town we went. It can't have been that late. It must have been 8 o'clock-ish at night, but it was winter, so it was dark. Pulled up, got our food. I should point out at this point that my Defender had two fixed bucket seats in it and no cubby box, so it was just like a small gap between them. So one of the lads was in the bucket seat. The other one was wedged at sort of a diagonal angle between the front seats.
Mm-hmm. Comfy.
Yeah, probably not.
It's better than walking.
So we get to the centre of Warwick, and anyone who knows it, there's a sort of pub hotel thing on the corner, and I was indicating to turn right, and I thought everything was clear. Started turning, and a moped came flying through the light the other side and went straight under the front of my Land Rover.
Wow.
The pub empties out into the junction because they've heard like a moped explode in the middle of the road. And yeah, as a 17-year-old who hadn't been driving that long with two passengers, one of which probably shouldn't have been there, it was a bit of a moment. But
ouch.
Luckily, the defender was fine.
Hang on a minute.
I just had a creased front bumper. The lad on the moped, however, broke his leg, and it was his 18th birthday the next day, so he didn't get off quite as lightly.
Really?
But, wow. Yeah, you live and learn, don't you?
Yeah, that's bad.
No, that's awful, though, isn't it? Because you just sort of...
So you were worse. Kind of at fault there, really, completely.
Yeah, I was.
You turned in front, yeah.
Well, I was so certain that when you do the statement or whatever for the insurance that I was fine to turn, that I, looking back, you know, because they send you the thing weeks later, I thought there was a filter light, like a green arrow to say that you could go across. And yeah, I don't know where this moped came from, but he just, yeah, wasn't a good time.
Yeah, it was bad.
And the second one, I was absolutely not in the wrong on the second one. I was in my Range Rover Classic, sat at some traffic lights near Cambridge, and I felt this weird sort of shunt from behind. I thought, that's a bit weird. I made sure I hadn't left it in gear or, you know, anything was out of place inside. And I looked in my mirror, and this poor girl was dragging her moped out from underneath the rear bumper. So I don't quite know how she didn't see the back of my lifted Range Rover, but she was fine, thankfully. And her parents came and picked her up. But other than that,
so fairly... if you listen to this, ride a moped, keep away from Martin.
Yeah,
or Land Rovers in general, you're likely to come off worse.
They do seem to be a bit of a magnet for them for some reason, but there you go. But no, generally speaking, touch wood.
Wood, I've never had an accident in a Land Rover. I wouldn't like to chance it.
There was another.
Hang on a minute.
There was one more. This wasn't that long ago, where it was. It was quite long ago, about 8 years ago, actually. I was turning right at a junction, turning right from a side road out onto a main road, and a bus came down the hill with its indicator on as if it was going to turn into where I was. So I thought, happy days. It was rush hour. Going quite slowly. I'll sneak out. And then the bus, indicator still on, didn't turn and hit the side of my Discovery.
Mm. So right turns are not your...
It turns out I'd be really good at NASCAR because I can't turn right. So there you go.
What is that? Have the indicators on?
Still yours.
Yeah, because it's what do they call it? Duty of, I can't remember what the exact phrase is.
Duty of care and attention.
The guy behind me in the car behind me was very unhelpful. I said, "Have you got a dash cam?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Great. Can I have that to show my insurance company? Because that bus is definitely indicating." But it turns out it doesn't matter if someone's indicating, you don't trust them and you stay where you are. Which seems counterintuitive to me, but there you go.
You should actually technically wait till you see their wheels turning.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know it's safe or not.
But
it is tricky. A lot of people put a lot of trust into other people's
actions. And a lot of people flash each other, don't they? And you're not even supposed to trust a flashing.
No, you wave somebody through. So say if you wave somebody across a pedestrian crossing and another car was coming the other way.
It's your fault.
It's your fault for waving them across.
Really?
You just have to let them make the decision. Yes, really. Yeah, there's a lot of...
You've got to cover your backside, haven't you while you're out there.
You've got to assume that everybody else driving is a complete muppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had a dash cam. Do you have a dash cam?
I do have an accompany car, yeah.
I was thinking about this earlier, because on the way here, I was in my Series 3, and the car in front of me was driving quite erratically and quite slowly, and it had front and rear dash cams. And I thought, this seems to be a bit of a theme. Like, when you see a car... with front and rear dash cams, they're often being driven by people who aren't that great at driving, he says, as someone who's just retired.
Yeah,
it's one of those things, right? I think if anything actually happened, you'd think, right, that won't happen again, I'll get a dash cam. But do you ever consciously go to a shop and buy a dash cam? Some people obviously do, don't they?
I guess so.
But yeah, from a company car perspective, you've got one just fitted to the car.
Don't have any choice.
Right.
I also have a Lightfoot thing that screeches at me every time I pull onto the A1.
Like a black box?
It sort of is. It's supposed to look at your driving style and encourage you to do so economically.
Okay.
It's a sort of an environmental green policy. It's an electric car.
I was going to say, sure, you can hammer that as hard as you want, can't you?
Well, allegedly you can't pull onto the A1 at speed without it screeching at you to take it steady.
So I think that's where the technology now is.
It's gone too far.
It's gone too far.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, fair enough. I you know, don't razz around braking and accelerating heavily through roundabouts and whatever. That makes sense to me. But when you've got to pull into a flow of traffic travelling at 30 miles an hour from some of these little A1 junctions coming out of Barnock, for example.
You have got to basically floor it.
Yeah, you do. Which otherwise, you're a hazard.
Which is why you couldn't join the A1 in your natural aspirated diesel on some of these junctions. Too dangerous. You just can't get up to speed quick enough. Right.
You'd be there for half a day waiting for a gap, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and then those gaps that you're actually changing the course of direction for those cars are going to have to swerve around you. It's too dangerous. You need something with a bit of power.
Well,
but dash cams are a funny old thing. A lot of people like almost engineering issues, so they've got some content to put to one of these YouTube channels.
Oh, there's so many, isn't there?
Cyclists with dash cams on the helmet.
As someone who used to work in Cambridge, cyclists with cameras on their helmets are to be avoided at all costs, but it's impossible to do so when you...
Like Cycling Mikey, someone like that.
Do you know what? I came out of central London yesterday. I drove in, and then obviously there were loads of protests yesterday because Trump was on his visit.
Oh, yes.
And so it was literally gridlocked, and it took me sort of 2.5 hours to get out of central London. Red lights don't apply to cyclists.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
Anyway, more correspondence, this time a little bit of, hopefully, some advice for Steve from a chap called Carl Cook. He says, "Hi guys, just wanted to pass on my appreciation for a great podcast." Look, that's the email, Vicky. See, I'm not making this up. People do actually like
specs
it.
Specs are on. Oh yes, well done.
There you go. Thanks. Some great topics covered and some I didn't think I'd enjoy. Well, you're welcome. A brief Land Rover ownership history. I started with a Millennium Discovery 2, owned 13 years ago, which did 50,000 miles, and I should have kept into a TDV8 Range Rover Vogue L322.
The regret.
Which he also should have kept, but now he's got a Defender 90 hardtop, which he thinks will end up with his daughter. This is what he's found as his daughter has grown older and her interest has grown in her dad's car. Her current car's a Freelander 2, so the bug's already been started. At the ripe old age of 22, the balance between age, insurance, and nagging has hit the sweet spot at insurance renewal. To cut a long story short, money was transferred and she was on. A couple of drives out with her dad were completed and she's off on her own. Freelander 2, actually a brilliant car,
I
reckon.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
For, Freelander 1 petrol, even that was brilliant.
Yeah, they are. They're really underrated things. After an eventful year, the renewal email arrived and slight reduction in cost, which took a couple of seconds to soak in. To confirm a second year of driving, a roof tent was purchased. I did ask what car it was going on, as the Defender has a roof rack. she fitted it to that, and off she went in it, camping with her best mate.
Fair play.
Yeah, good on you. And then, as you can see, she's sort of becoming to take ownership of this Defender slightly more by putting her tent on it and things like that.
Okay,
yeah. I'm not sure Carl's...
Nice work, daughter.
yeah.
Suck top, it up, Dad.
Top daughtering.
Yes.
The next stage of sliding ownership, she's built drawers in the back to put all the camping gear in. I said, "What's up with a couple of boxes?" And she looked up, rolled her eyes with disgust. So off she went to the DIY store to buy some wood, and she bought some drawer runners off Amazon. We now have a sliding drawer system, fully lined and carpeted. And she took the opportunity to sound deaden it as well. Now, we suffer an issue that Steve suffers from, which is a saggy back end. Due to the increased weight in the back of the 90, the back sits a bit low and the offside headlamp aim was too high on MOT because it's pointing up. They adjusted it and it passed, but they went looking for a solution. And that solution was found, you may be interested to hear, with some standard height heavy-duty springs with super gas shock absorbers, standard height on the front, 50mm lift on the rear, which has transformed it, levelled it out, and the shocks especially make a really big difference. So something to think about there, Steve.
Yeah, I definitely need to sort that out. I've got a few jobs to do with that, really. Coming into winter, rear crossmember needs painting again, and I might do the springs.
Yeah, I think that would probably be a good thing, because the anti-roll bars made a big difference, didn't they? But it's still just that little bit low at the back, isn't it?
Especially when I put the Penman trailer on the back, that camping trailer that you probably saw at the show, Vicky. It just sits down, and then you lose the feeling of the steering. It just gets a bit light. So, I think playing around with springs, and they're quite cheap to replace, aren't they, springs?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you said that you'd replaced my rear springs with 109 heavy-duty ones.
Yeah.
And there'd been some discussion at that point about putting parabolics on it because they're even more heavy-duty, right? But I was adamant not to put parabolics on it because it then won't fit under the up-and-over garage door that I've got.
Yes.
But actually, those springs that you fitted, I've now got that slight list to the left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because obviously the driver sits on the driver's side, the cupboard is on the driver's side, the fuel tank is on the driver's side, and albeit that it's got a twin tank and I try and always remember to fill the passenger side under seat fuel tank, obviously you've permanently got this.
Yeah.
It's a Caravaggan. It's solid wood. It's not like sort of lightweight aluminium cupboard or anything. So it's now just beginning to lean ever so slightly to the right again.
I probably need
new springs again. But how long's that been? 6 years?
I forget what year we did it in, but yeah, it must be. It's been a little while, hasn't it?
And you just sometimes wonder of the quality of the springs.
Yeah, this is the thing, is I think...
And weren't they cast offs from Neil anyway?
Yeah, Neil. Yeah, Neil, so they come from Neil's stash, so...
So they may be 10 years old.
Yes.
They might have matured, but batches of springs, there's certain companies that are really good, consistent suppliers, but I think it really does depend when you bought them, because some are great, like currently, the current sort of aftermarket, your standard aftermarket springs, most people rave about and they're really, really good, but it might well be that they were from...
How much am I looking at? Because, again, I should do it before it gets worse, really. It's not going to improve, is it?
I honestly don't know. I'd have to have a look, see what they are currently. But
next time you want a technical feature,
leaf spring swap. The parabolics, like you say, you mentioned parabolics. They do, they ride a bit softer and they're actually not as good at carrying weight as the standard ones, but they do give you a bit of lift, which is the issue you'd have with your garage.
But why would somebody be recommending parabolics then? Because I'm sure it was you guys that were having that conversation.
I don't know, it was years ago.
Or maybe it was to do with the ride not being quite so hard.
Could have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could have been it.
Could have been. I've got parabolics on my Series 3 and I really like them. They're quite soft. You notice going from a standard multi-leaf Land Rover spring to a parabolic, whereas before I could take roundabouts reasonably quickly because it cornered quite flat. With parabolics, they're that
it's
much softer. It really wallows a bit. But from a ride comfort point of view, they are better, but as soon as you put any weight in the back, you notice it drop quicker. So there's a few different things.
Such a compromise, isn't there, with suspension? It's probably one of the most talked about subjects beyond wheels and tyres, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those, isn't it? I think, personally, when I change them again, I'll go back to multi-leafs.
Okay.
But that's a little way down the line.
That's what I need to do, is just replace them.
Get some fresh 109 ones on the back.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
Yeah.
Got any
problems? Steel.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, it really is that consistency, I think, that's a problem with certain products. But, what can you do? Steve, any project updates?
Been tinkering about this week fitting a bulkhead removal bar onto my rear tub.
Yes.
So trying to drill all the holes before the rear tub goes off to paint so that I don't have to damage anything. And it's proven a little bit testing so far. In the fact that, thing is, you've got aftermarket parts meeting other aftermarket parts, and there's they a bit of adjustment. Together. Yeah, quite. Yeah. So trying to do, because I've got no bulkhead behind the seats of this rebuild project, so the bar replaces that and gives it structural integrity, yep. I suppose you'd say.
And holds your seats upright.
But you have to sort of, yeah, and then you can put the seat back a bit further, etc. Yeah, at the moment, I'm just having to, I can't really explain it, but
it's a bit of fettling needed, yeah. Isn't there?
Yeah, and you've got to be in the right frame of mind. You said saying about working on Land Rovers, if you're not in the right frame of mind, which I wasn't yesterday.
Okay.
I could have just said bye to the Land Rover and not seen it for another couple of weeks. But I'm keen to go back in there now. I've got a fresh perspective of the job.
It's like writing. Sometimes you can be faced with a blank page and you can't fill it for love nor money. But if you walk away and go make a brew and do something else and then you come back to it and it just flows out.
And it
out.
Flows, yeah. No,
you
I get
just
that.
Have to
yeah.
be in the right frame of mind.
Do you ever find it, Vicky, when you write something, like a story or feature or whatever, and then you come back to it like the next day or a couple of days later and you come back and you don't even you don't remember writing it, or you read it and think, this is brilliant, how did I write this? Or you read it and think, this is an absolute load of tripe. What on earth
was
happened
here? What was I thinking? Yes, yeah. Completely. All the time.
That's not just me, then.
No,
that's good.
No. And the thing is, it's also you can never proofread your own stuff, because you always you read what you think that you've written as opposed to what's actually on the page.
Definitely. It's very, very odd. Yeah. We get some absolutely cracking Reader's Rovers stories in. I've had some real blinders recently. If you've got a Land Rover and you do interesting or even uninteresting stuff with it and you'd like to see it in the pages of the mag, do drop me an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, and tell us a little bit about it. Send over a couple of pictures and we'd love to have you in, because there's some
Agreed.
Really cool like variety of stuff that goes on, and we'd love to see it.
Mm.
Would you like to hear another listener's email?
Yeah, go on then.
This
it's
is
been
fully
a busy time, hasn't it? For...
Yeah, it's been good. We've got lots of feedback recently, and we keep it coming because we love it. Darren Letts has been in touch. He's very supportive of the pub night idea.
Darren Letts, that's a name. We've had an email from him before.
We have, yes. He says, great podcast as usual. I was having a good old chuckle at the Tent Virgin banter at the beginning of the one a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I listened to that back.
You were a little bit risque.
Yeah, close to the mark there.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, to keep it short and sweet, a pub night at Caffeine and Machine would be absolutely awesome. I took our Defender there a couple of weeks ago and I was surprised at how much attention it got and how many people were looking around it rather than anything else that was up there that night.
Nice.
So yeah, get it booked in. Kind regards, Darren.
And of course there's more than one Caffeine and Machine now, isn't there? Because there was the original one near Stratford.
That's it.
And now there's one in Bedfordshire and one elsewhere, I think. But yeah, be worth having a look at.
But there's loads of stuff going on, whether it's the Tion tailgates, the various club meets, and there's even the Series 1, 2, 3 club's got loads of...
Funny you should segue beautifully into that, Vicky.
No, it's not my first rodeo.
You are. You are. Fenland chapter of the Series 1,
chapter.
2, 3 club.
That makes me sound like I'm going to sort of beat people up for fun.
It's not quite that sinister.
No, I am, yes, allegedly area rep for the Fens. Not the most busy of areas, and it's a strange area because it's so huge, and I live on the very sort of western edge of the Fens.
Right.
But yeah, we do try and do the odd bit, and are a sort of a central hub for people who've got any questions, and anybody want any help with any technical things, I can send other people rather than go myself. But yeah, we normally do a winter camp out back end of January, beginning of February. And
indeed.
Yeah, organised a club stand at the LRO thing, did a big social meal on the Friday night. But yeah, Series 1, 2, 3 clubs going from strength to strength.
It's a really good, fun, enjoyable, laid-back club to be a part of. I'm a fully paid-up member and I very much enjoy it.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Done two of the three winter campouts. Yeah. Always fun. Make sure you take extra clothes and sleeping bags.
The one you went to earlier in the year?
Yes.
Yeah, January. It was February this year.
It was my birthday, so I was.
I thought we missed. Like, I was missing out because I don't have a Series 1, 2, or 3.
Well,
in fairness, though, for the winter camp out, because it's in January, I don't necessarily expect people to sort of camp in the back of. So, there were a couple of people who came up from London, and one of them was in a Grenadier, another one was in a Defender with a roof turn.
Yes.
They are members of the Series 1, 2, 3 club, okay. But it's a question of, you know, it's just a social.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And some people chose it as an excuse to get the Series out of the garage and give it a bit of a run out before the season starts. And then there were others who were like, just, yeah, I'm going to go in comfort. I know that I'm going to get there and I'm not going to get wet and just going to come along for the social anyway. So
yeah, it's really... Okay. You come to the next one.
Yeah, you should.
Oh, thanks.
It's only up the road, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very, very local, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny story, actually. The chap in the Grenadier that came this year,
mm-hmm.
I recognised that car straight away because it was the press car I'd had on loan for a week from Ineos because I did a review in the mag.
Yeah. Well, he's since bought it.
So it's changed hands twice, I think, since Ineos sold it. But he now owns it and he's got lovely overland set up in the back and roof tent and all sorts. Really smart thing. It's the petrol 3.
Is that the one that, is it the same one as we had when it was first launched at LRM Live?
No. It might have been. FXY is the reg.
I can't remember. We had it in the arena, didn't we? And everyone was really interested.
It might have
never been seen.
Yes, it would have been because Gary took it after that and then I picked it up from Gary.
Yeah, I've driven that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was used and abused.
Which is rather upset Mick because he thought he was sort of, you know...
He asked me to send him the PDFs of the feature, so I did. And I also sent him the video of us fording it with water up over the windscreen, which I'm not sure he was that pleased about. But anyway, it's a great car, and I'm glad he's got it.
Well, that's the thing with press cars. You don't really know what they've been through.
No.
No.
But he'll have got a bargain, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure he would have done. Yeah. Yes, cool thing.
Have you ever driven a Grenadier, have you?
No.
Would you like to?
What's your opinion of it?
I like it, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I think the bumper is a little bit of a strange sort of... face. It's like it got an overbite.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a fat lip going on, hasn't it? Yeah.
So that's an acquired. It's like a British bulldog with a bit of an overbite. Anyway, that's just an acquired visual. But in terms of the actual technical specification and its capabilities off-road, I think it's fantastic. Anyhow, I'd love to get my hands on it.
Mm. Yeah, well, hopefully if he comes to the winter camp out again or another
Actually, that's true. I should have kicked Mick out of his...
You could hijack it.
Yeah.
How do you find it, like, running the club, being a rep?
Being a rep, I always feel guilty that I don't do more, if I'm totally honest. And that's just because I work full time. I do various things on, you know, I've got kids who are at university and various hobbies and interests and friends all over the country. And I'm always busy doing a million and one other things. And I wish I had a bit more time to dedicate to it. But in terms of bringing people together, doing the social side of things, you just try and look after people, don't you?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing about the clubs is you get to know people around Land Rovers, and that's the sort of the opener. But then you find out all sorts of things about their lives, and when people are maybe struggling, there's a lot of people who were sort of working for themselves, by themselves, certainly through the pandemic, and it was quite a lonely experience. And I think actually having something sort of pulling you out of yourself. And
you say I don't think you should feel guilty at all for not doing more, because it's a volunteer role.
It's more that when it's like, we need some content for the club newsletter, and I'm like,
oh, okay.
I have no content because I've done nothing. That's what I mean about the guilt factor. I have done lots, but not in the name of the club. That's what I mean. But I don't feel guilty. I just, I guess I wish I had more time, but this is the nature of being fully employed and a busy woman, right?
Doing like grown-up stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Not often.
But it's a great club. I'm really, really pleased it's grown in the way it has. And there's so many different... There's bound to be, if you like the sound of this club, you don't have to, you know, you don't even have to own a Series 1, 2 or 3 as long as you're enthusiastic.
No, enthusiastic. And again, it doesn't matter what state, even if you do own one, it doesn't have to be roadworthy. There's various different things, whether it's a social meetup and a camp, whether it's the annual rally, whether it's a pub meet, or whether it's actually a, you know, a bacon roll and a technical meet. Some people host sort of, I need a bit of, you know, it's a job that needs more than one pair of hands. I'll provide the bacon if you provide the labour. And they do these sort of technical meets and stuff. It doesn't do any of the... what's the one you're talking to the DVLA about getting it historically registered and stuff? It's a different club from some of the other clubs that are out there. It's very much focused around the social interaction and stuff.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I mean, you don't have to just belong to one club. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's different clubs for different things. And I think, as far as like you,
many people do belong to loads of clubs.
From an actually chatting to people, there's loads of Facebook groups, isn't there, for the Series 1, 2, 3 club, the different areas, meeting up. It's very laid back and everyone's very welcoming. And it's a very inclusive club, which I really like, because I think over time, it's very easy to fall into a bit of an inward-facing circle if you're not careful. And it's definitely avoided that.
Absolutely. And nobody will criticise you if you call something a safari rig or if you happen to have Defender mirrors on your fairly standard Series 2 or if you've got a V8 conversion. And it's not, you know, there's nothing precious about it. As long as you are enjoying the vehicle, using it, it doesn't matter. You know, keep them on the road, whatever, however you can.
That's what it should be about.
Mm. Yeah,
I agree. I think that's cracking. So yeah, join. You can look it up on Facebook, Series 1, 2, 3 Club.
Yes.
And there's a newsletter, isn't there?
Yes, and that's in the process of being redesigned. It's going to be a all snazzy new digital magazine, basically.
Exciting.
Every quarter, I think it's quarterly. It could be fortnightly. This is me not being up to date with what's going on in the club. Confessions, but it is. The Facebook group's got 40,000 people on it, but the actual paid up members, it's coming up to 5,000, I think now.
Excellent.
It's a lot of people actually.
All over the place. Yeah. Opening new chapters, as you describe them, new areas, chapters.
I think chapters is the right word.
I just think of when he said the Hell's Angels chapter.
Oh, really?
This is what I mean about beating people up. It's like rival gangs.
When you say the word chapter, it's probably
I didn't make that connection, but fair enough. Areas
is what it means to me.
Left a Harley outside. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like,
my mask complete with sort of studding.
Yeah. Fair enough. I won't call them chapters.
No, you might be right. Areas. But yeah, we're opening loads of new areas all the time. Loads of reps are stepping up. And again, the club is just grateful for anybody who's willing to put their hat in the ring and organise something. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's, like I say, just a Friday night beer in a pub somewhere and take some nice pictures in a pub car park, or whether it's a laning day or it's a day down at the local museum, whatever.
So I've never ever been a member of a Land Rover club.
Have you not?
Never in my life.
Well, this is you need to sign up for this one, Stevie. We'll let you in with your coil springs.
Yeah, but like, it sounds like a good excuse to buy another Land Rover, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it does.
You need to have a series now.
Yeah, I do need a series. I did enjoy owning a series.
Yeah.
And now I'd have a 2.25 petrol.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be... when I had series, they were daily cars.
Well, if you want to cure yourself of that, I'm more than happy to lend you mine.
Thanks.
Snip up to Scotland, innit?
Yeah. Go and see if you as your... How tall are you?
6'3".
Yeah. Well, you know, go and see if you can try and sleep in it.
Don't buy a truck cab would be my advice.
Oh.
No, again, I just think most Land Rovers should be soft top. Mm. Love rag top Land Rover.
Mm. Agreed.
But yeah. Anyway, got my own to finish first.
Yeah, you have, yeah. Don't get sidetracked with anything else.
Projects. No.
But
my ADHD and all that.
Do you have a quick feature of the week in the current issue of Land Rover Monthly?
Fire away.
This is a feature which I absolutely love. So, if you were around when Discovery 1 and P38 Range Rover were bursting into the scene, you will have probably seen some of these photos before, and they really did evoke a lot of brilliant memories for me looking at the car magazines from back in the day of the launches of these cars. And the man behind a lot of that stuff was a man called Colin Warkey, who's Land Rover's PR chief during what is definitely one of the most exciting periods of Land Rover's history. This piece is in the classic section of the latest issue of Land Rover Monthly, and it is
soft spot for Discovery Ones. Have driven it around glaciers in Iceland in my time.
Really?
They're amazing, yeah.
This is you'll love this. It's an absolutely cracking piece, straight from Colin. Absolutely brilliant photography from Nick Dimbleby, Roger Craythorne, Colin himself, and Brian Linton. And it's just an absolute dive into nostalgia. It's
Land Rover Hall of Fame, that.
Absolutely awesome stuff. So do not miss this. It's a really, really cool piece. And Colin's launching a book as well, called Stories Behind the Headlines, which will be on sale very soon. The details of that are in the feature, so definitely go out.
Christmas is coming up, right?
Exactly.
Perfect stocking fillers.
The ideal excuse. Go out, grab the mag, subscribe. We talked about our subscription deal on two weeks ago, wasn't it? An absolutely stunning deal.
And that deal is still on the table.
Yeah, 3 issues for £3.
As a trial offer.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So if you're new to Land Rover Monthly, never picked up an issue, subscribe, trial it out for 3 months.
See, I would be very disappointed if Christmas doesn't give me that.
There you go.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
Rude not to. Product of the week then. We'll stay on the theme of Discovery. Exmoor Trim have recently launched their retrim kits for Discovery 2.
Yeah, that I've seen that. Really interesting.
So Discovery 2, good ones, now fetching reasonable money. Like,
And worth keeping on top of.
Oh, definitely. Definitely worth
that looks mint.
Keeping nice. Doesn't that look mint. Smart?
Yeah, it does.
So these, obviously, we know that the TD5 will do incredible mileages. The body and the chassis will if you keep them rust-proofed, but the interiors do suffer from wear at the end of the day. Family vehicles, used for work sometimes, they do suffer. But now, Exmoor Trim have launched their retrim range, which means you can keep the interior looking as good as the rest of it. So you get replacement covers, new foams for the front seat kits, and they do the armrest covers as well. And you can use the existing foams on the rear seats for ISOFIX and non-ISOFIX rear bench seats. And the kits start at £594, which, considering how old the Disco 2 is now...
Yeah, and considering what that is as well, that doesn't sound too unreasonable, does it?
Definitely not. So head to exmoortrim.co.uk and have a little look.
Nice.
There you go. Anything else to add?
Not really.
Better go do some work, really, haven't we? Oh, dear.
Is that it? That's the only two products you're featuring this year?
We only do one a week.
Oh,
we do a feature of the week.
Okay.
You'd know this because you're such a regular listener.
Yeah, I should.
And,
I've told you I don't work on my own Land Rovers.
So you don't have to work on them to listen to us rattle on for an hour. But we're grateful that people do. And like I said earlier on, if you've got any questions or any feedback, send us a little email at editorial@lrm.co.uk and leave us a rating on your preferred streaming platform, because we really do appreciate it. But for now, I reckon we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye for now. It's bye-bye from him.